Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Welcoming back to the show, retired police lieutenant and current assistant dean and director of the Center for Advanced Policing and senior lecturer for Forensics Science Department at the University of New Haven, and that is Lisa Daddio. Welcome back to the show, Lisa. How are you?
I am well, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me back.
I'm glad to have you back. I mean, unfortunately, I wish it was under better circumstances. It's been, to put it bluntly, it's been a hell of a month, I think, between Buffalo, Texas. We've had two other shootings, one in Philadelphia, another in a hospital. Our nation is erupting right now. I think it's been erupting, but I think in this last month it's been extreme. And I know there are a lot of eyes on Washington, D.C. What should we do? Are the answers guns? Are the answers mental health related? Is it that we have a shortage of cops? Is it everything? Social media? I mean, it just feels like the whole nation right now is pointing at a bunch of different things, but we can't seem to agree really on anything together collectively. So from your professional standpoint, how have you digested what's been going on in recent weeks? And what do you think are some of the answers, some of the solutions?
So, you know, after a mass shooting, and trust me, every shooting that occurs is awful. It's heartbreaking, or it should be. We shouldn't be immune to some of our cities having record numbers of shootings and homicides due to firearms daily, weekly, over a weekend. So every death at the hand of a firearm should be a cause of concern. What's been happening, and we see it all the time after a mass shooting, where obviously multiple people are shot and killed, we look at gun laws always. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of emotion, rightfully so, about that, because the response is we have to do something. And what is it? And so, you know, looking, and again, being from Connecticut, being with the New Haven Police Department at the time that Sandy Hook had happened, knowing people that live in Newtown, and, you know, just the impact that that had on our small state of Connecticut, you know, we're still reeling from that and what worked and what didn't work. And a lot of times what happens, and, you know, it happened in Texas, unfortunately, is everything was done right, meaning the gun was able to be purchased, background checks were done, and things were there. What wasn't known from what information is out there, that the person, the shooter, was going to go and then target an elementary school and kill multiple children and adults in that incident. And so we never know somebody's motive when they're purchasing any type of firearm, not just an AR-15 or a handgun, because you could do the same damage. I mean, obviously, with an AR-15, it's much more rapid, much more deadlier. But guns are guns. Whether it's a revolver or it's a rifle or shotgun, you still have the same effect, that you can injure and or kill someone. So, you know, we do have a lot as a country. We have a lot of laws already in place, and states have stricter laws. Connecticut, we have some pretty strict gun laws, but yet there's still shootings and homicides that are occurring in our state. And a lot of times the deaths that are caused by people who have acquired the guns illegally. So while we want to change laws that currently exist and background checks and have red flag laws and, you know, all of that helps, but you're not going to stop it. Because where there's a will, there's a way, and someone is still going to go ahead and get a firearm, whether it's illegally, whether or not now they manufacture them, utilizing technology, and these ghost guns that everyone is talking about and that, in fact, very much exist in our country. So, you know, it's a lot. And how do we do it? And where do we target? And to your point, Melissa, you know, is it a mental health issue? Is it more laws and regulation issue? It's a combination.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, I want to just for a second stop you because I think there are a lot of great things that you brought up, and I just wanted to harp on one of the things
absolutely.
That you had said. You know, the idea that there are so many laws on the books. And, you know, if you look at Connecticut's laws, even Florida, it has some of the toughest gun laws, and it's a very majority Republican held state. My question is, you know, my issue with as a mom, I'm cool with whatever. I really am. I just want my kid to come home at the end of the day. I think most Americans can agree on that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and honestly, I'm pro gun. I think as long as you follow the rules, you do it correctly, you get the, you know, your license and you're using it responsibly. I'm not someone who's going to go, oh, my gosh, I'm scared of guns. I'm against them. I just have never been that way. With that being said, do you agree with having universal laws on the books versus state to state having different rules? Because, like, for example, New York passing all those laws yesterday, great, or earlier this week, that's great. But at the same time, what would stop somebody, like you were saying, from illegally getting a gun somewhere else something?
And to your point, illegally, right? So with some individuals, no matter what exists, they can still go ahead.
Yeah.
You can easily do that. You can go ahead and you could honestly, and I hate to even say this, I mean, you could break into someone's home. You can break into a gun store, which has happened everywhere, you know. You can do it, so you can still get them. And that's not going to stop a criminal from committing a crime. So you can put all these safeguards in place. You can go ahead and do universal whatever, you know, to try to make it. But if there's somebody that is intent on going to do something, they're going to do it. Let's look what happened, you know, in the hospital recently. You know, that person set out that day to do
to take that doctor down. Yeah.
Yeah.
To take that doctor down.
Because of, you know, the way that they were feeling and, you know, the fact that the shooter thought that it's, you know, what he was still going through medically was the fault of the doctor. And we've seen this play out even here in Connecticut, mm-hmm. where doctors were targeted because of either causing injury and or death to somebody. You know, there are these shootings in the hospital, everything, right?
Right.
So it's not going to stop someone who's hell-bent on going and committing an act of violence mm-hmm. if they can do it legally. And if they can't do it legally, you can purchase them anywhere.
So even if later this week, if the Senate by some, I'm going to call it crazy because I do think it didn't happen with Sandy Hook and it hasn't happened since then. If by some crazy chance they were to pass bipartisan legislation on gun laws, essentially, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm just asking, essentially, it's really not going to do an awful lot.
You know, it's hard to say. If I can predict the future, you know, like many of us, it would be great. I don't know, because I go back to if you set out to commit a crime, you're going to commit it no matter mm-hmm. what way.
Right.
And so you can put all the laws you want in place. I mean, I'm going to bring up, and it's always a hot topic, the Chicago. Some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
And it's like one of the deadliest places to live.
Their shooting deaths and shootings are off the freaking charts.
I love talking to this guest. I think she's phenomenal. Lisa Dondia, who is the assistant dean and director of the Center for Advanced Policing, senior lecturer at the University of New Haven, and also the director of the National De-Escalation Training Center for the Northeast Region. And we love having Lisa on the show, getting her perspective this morning. We're talking about what really is going on in our country, what can work, what isn't working, what may not even work if we are passing any laws in the near future. So, Lisa, you would use the example of Chicago, one of the most strictest areas for gun laws, and yet it's nowhere that you want to vacation anytime soon. there's just a lot that's erupting there. It's so true, and I think you make a very valid point. So why is that happening? Why is that happening? If there's so many gun laws on the book, why is Chicago one of the deadliest places right now in America to live in?
It goes back to individuals, for whatever reason, are still going to commit crimes, even though it's illegal to do so. Crimes, they're still going to get the firearms illegally to commit the acts of violence that they're committing. So, you know, we can't legislate in law and create these laws out of this mess. it's a much deeper issue. You know, in Chicago, it's what a lot of cities are plagued with. You have this violence that's going on. Some are targeted between neighborhood factions, gangs, and others. And so, you know, there's no more going out and, you know, fighting it out with your hands. It's always, unfortunately, a firearm that's utilized to settle a dispute. It's happening in cities everywhere. It's not just Chicago, and I don't want to just pick on Chicago, but they're known for their strict gun laws, and yet they still have, my gosh, you know, dozens of homicides, sometimes in a 2-week period, and multiple shootings and multiple victims who are all ages, from, you know, young children all the way up to and including adults. And we're not addressing all of that. And so how do we tackle it? And mm-hmm. it's not just a law enforcement response, because law enforcement is doing what they can do. It comes down to a court response, right? The prosecutors, the judges. And we can't incarcerate our way out of this either, because we know that that doesn't work either as a deterrent. So, you know, it's a battle. It's a challenge.
Yeah.
As a country, we've been experiencing for decades. I'll bring up something. And again, there's always been a lot of, you know, comparisons between firearms and illegal narcotics mm-hmm. and all these laws that are in place. And you know, but it hasn't stopped the drugs from coming into
right.
our country and being made in our country.
Yeah, they're worse than they ever were before. Absolutely.
Of course they are. And, yeah. and now we have fentanyl, right?
Right.
And
yeah,
so
exactly.
fentanyl is coming in and doing more damage. And it's illegal already, but it's not stopping people. There's no
right.
deterrent.
Right. So I was just going to say, we're talking to Lisa Daddio this morning. Really interesting conversation about gun laws, if it really would even make a difference. When you hear lawmakers, Lisa, say this isn't a problem you see in any other country in the world except for here in the United States, what is your response to that?
Why? but again, you know, being in criminal justice, in the field of criminal justice, and studying it as an undergrad and a graduate student, you know, why is that the case? And this is something that has been historic since I've been, you know, I'll take my undergrad studies going back freaking almost 40 years ago. And, you know, it was always, the United States is always the most violent country in the world.
Really?
And it's like, why? Yeah. So why is
it? I find that shocking.
It?
Wait, really? We're still one of the most violent countries? Really? Even years ago we were that way? That's shocking.
History, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we have these shootings. We have these mass shootings. There's other issues going on in other countries, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
I won't even get into the whole humanitarian and the horrific things that are happening in countries by governments to their own people.
Well, so what's interesting is when you hear about these lawmakers who say, you know, we need to put a, you know, like a, we have to crack down on our guns. I think of, there are some countries that I will not name who have put such restrictions on certain guns that the people who live there cannot even defend themselves. And they are,
right.
they literally have no weapons at their disposal to
right.
defend themselves. So
that's right.
So there are some extremes that no one really talks about in the news, but I digress. But yeah, that's the big question is then why is it that comparison keeps coming up? Because if you talk to any, especially Democratic leaders, they will tell you this is not a problem in any other country but here. And it's hard to disagree with that. I think what's hard about this, Lisa, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we live now in a place where as soon as you have an R or a D next to your name, you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it
yeah.
because you've either got the gun, you've got the gun side. Let's just get rid of guns. That's the problem. Guns, guns, guns. And then you have the other side that's like, no, the problem is mental health. But what, you know, could it be a combination?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what, Melissa, you bring up an incredible point, right? And that's why you and I get along so well together and we have these great conversations because I can see both sides, right? And I try to see both sides. And so which party you're affiliated with, if you're affiliated with either, because you don't have to be. You tend to be, you know, in one side of the camp or on the other side of the camp.
Right.
And of course, we don't work together. And so as legislators, because they're supposed to be collegial, we know they're not. You know, like we can't even get past that to address it. And so, yeah, you hear all the time, no other countries are having mass shootings. No other countries are having school shootings. They have had, though, there have been school incidents in other countries. A lot of it, I think, is we don't know about it. We can't trust sometimes information coming out of those other countries, or it's just being kept in house and not coming out. So, you know, other things happen, bombings, stabbings, you know, there's other types of violence that are occurring in other countries that we're not seeing here, typically. And so, you know, you can say, well, it's because guns are so easy. Well, yes, they're there. And most law-abiding people are not using a firearm to commit an act of violence or to commit a crime.
Right.
And so, you know, then it comes back to, okay, you know, why do we have such a high crime rate here in the United States of America? Why?
I'm going to throw a simple question at you, Lisa. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but I'm curious if the Senate were to pass, if the Congress were to pass a law that's like, all right, universal background checks, raise the age to 21. And I'm thinking of the other one that I'm totally slipping out of and I'm forgetting it right now. But either way, which one? Yeah, I'm missing one. There's three. Oh, the red flag laws.
Yeah, I was going to say, I figured you were going with the red flag.
The red flag. So if those three things, that seems to be the only three that debatably could pass at this point. If those were to pass and not really anything changes, do you think then this opens up the conversation to hear the other side, which is, okay, We did what you've been asking for many, many years. Not a lot's changing. So what do we do about mental health? Because that really is at the core of the issue here. I think everyone agrees with that. But how do you address mental health? I think that continues to be the big question, is how do you do it?
Well, because a lot of things, right? So it comes back to the people who know the shooters the best tend to be family and or friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, do you put the onus on them that if they see whatever, I mean, you know, we're just in a really bad place as a country as a whole, due to the pandemic and everything. So, I'm tired of using the pandemic as an excuse for some of what's happening.
Right.
And let's, you know, it's an excuse. So, you know, what onus does family and friends have on somebody? And you hear about it, all this stuff comes up always afterwards, right? After a mass incident.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, yeah, mental health is an issue. And what's always first to get cut from budgets? Mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitals can't sustain it. There's not enough therapists. There's not enough hospital beds. There's very limited residential treatment facilities.
Yes, I agree.
But not all these people need to be hospitalized, right? Something triggers them. Let's go back to the hospital shooting. Something triggered that shooter to target the doctor in the hospital because of the injuries and the treatment and everything that he's stating had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to flag that? And who knows what somebody's going to do that they have a propensity to commit an act of violence.
Right.
Until after the fact. And so, and then as a homeless is something that we didn't even talk about. The majority of the American public do not believe our government officials or even law enforcement officials. So when they're coming out with information,
they don't have faith in what they're saying. Yeah.
And everything's a conspiracy, right? I mean, we're still hearing that.
That's what we're living in, though. That's the world we live in right now. I know even as a journalist, I have debated leaving this industry so many times because if I hear fake news one more time, I could just blow my
mind.
I mean, it's crazy. It really is. But it exists and it's real and we have networks that are now driven by parties and it's, I mean, this world has gone wackadoodle, if I do say so myself. Lisa, I wish I had 5 hours to talk to you. I think you're excellent. I want to have you back on the show maybe as early as next week because I'd love to continue this conversation. I know I had phone calls coming in, but I wanted to at least set the standard here and continue the talks with you because I think you have a wealth of knowledge on this topic. I know I'm learning an awful lot from you and I think our listeners are too. So I'd love to have you back on really soon.
Absolutely. And I don't have all the answers, Melissa. And my views can differ from your viewers as well, because that's what it's all about, right? So I would love to be back next week if that works. And thank you again for having me. This was awesome.
I appreciate you. Lisa Donio, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. And we'll talk to her really soon. Lisa Donio with the University of New Haven, also the director of the Center for Advanced Policing at the university, a senior lecturer and the director of the National De-escalation Training Center for the Northeast Region. Welcoming back to the show this morning, sleep medicine specialist Dr. Christina Abavana with Hartford Healthcare. Good morning to you, Dr. Abavana. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. I had to have you back on. This study that we learned about just days ago, I think, is very alarming. And I think it reiterates what you and I had really not that long ago talked about, which is the need to consult with doctors. Melatonin, and it sounds like in the last 10 years, there's been a 530% increase in calls to poison control centers across the country because kids are taking too much melatonin. First of all, what were your thoughts when you heard about this?
Well, it's shocking to know that the increase has gone up so high. However, you know, there are a lot of people using melatonin these days because it can be purchased over the counter. Mm-hmm. So what's happening is a lot of children are exposed to melatonin at home, right? So the risk of taking melatonin maybe unintentionally also increases because it's just available in most homes.
So I'm curious, from your professional standpoint, when is an appropriate age to even give your kids melatonin? Like, to me, I never even really knew what it was until I was an adult and you started to hear mm-hmm. the words, oh, you're struggling with sleep. Maybe you need to get some sleep. You know, again, that wasn't until I got to college. I never even knew melatonin existed. Now, I know, as you mentioned, it is an over-the-counter medication. It does not require a prescription, but you're giving your kids melatonin, like, that just seems foreign to me. When should you even be taking melatonin or considered to take it?
Right. So I think, you know, the appropriate question is to always ask yourself, why are you having difficulty sleeping? Why is your child having difficulty sleeping? Right. There has to be a reason. There's usually a cause. And treatment of the cause can be varies. Right. So melatonin is often used to treat circadian rhythm disorders. These are disorders that affect the timing of our sleep and wake cycles. So when used appropriately, you know, there is a use for it, but it has to be appropriate to the cause of the sleeping difficulty issue. And so in order to initiate a child, or particularly children, on melatonin, it is important to discuss with a pediatrician. Maybe to help determine the cause of the sleep disorder. And melatonin is just not a panacea for sleep, right? You just don't take melatonin for every cause of sleeping difficulty. So I think it's very, very important that, you know, before initiating melatonin or any sleep aid, particularly in children, to discuss with a pediatrician.
Okay, so I want to just make sure for anyone who may have missed part of what you were saying. In layman's terms, Dr. Abavana, it sounds like for kids, you should be basically exercising every avenue with their pediatrician before you just determine melatonin is appropriate. Is that what you're saying? I mean, it shouldn't really be needed right out of the gate for a kid if they're having trouble sleeping.
Right, absolutely. There are various reasons why children have difficulty sleeping, and sometimes melatonin can be recommended and sometimes it's not, but just don't start it without discussing with a pediatrician.
We're talking to Dr. Abavana about the melatonin study that came out just days ago, and it shows that there was a massive increase, I mean a significant increase, in calls to poison control centers across the country because kids were ending up in hospital beds. There were even cases where kids were ending up on ventilators because they were taking too much. And I remember the last time you and I talked, Dr. Abavana, you said one of the biggest problems with melatonin is that people take way too much. They take much, the large quantities of it without getting their doctor's approval. Tell us just some of the risks. Like, what happens if you take too much?
So, you know, melatonin is naturally produced in the brain. So we all produce melatonin, right? Particularly in children, they produce adequate quantities of melatonin. So what happens is when you start taking melatonin as a supplement, particularly in high doses, you can suppress your own melatonin production, right? So generally, you can suppress your melatonin production. You may end up having more difficulty sleeping if you don't take melatonin because you're not used, you're used to taking it every night. But, you know, melatonin, when you take extremely high doses, you can become symptomatic from it, meaning you can develop symptoms like headaches and nausea, vomiting, confusion, even high blood pressure and low blood pressure can develop. Most often it's well tolerated. However, there are instances where you can become symptomatic from it.
Why do you think, Dr. Abhavana, there was such a spike nationally? Why do you think we saw this get so out of control?
Well, I think melatonin is just very easily accessible to most people, right? So you can just go to your CVS or local drugstore and purchase melatonin over the counter. Melatonin is not, it's considered a dietary supplement in the United States. It's not considered so in many countries. In many countries, you need a prescription to purchase melatonin.
Interesting.
So because melatonin is not well regulated in this country, what ends up happening is that the different brands of melatonin can contain different quantities of melatonin. So you may be taking more melatonin than is indicated on the label, on the drug label. And so now, you know, it's just readily available in our homes. Children are getting exposed to it. And, you know, sometimes it comes in gummies, you know, and children can mistake it for candy. It's very enticing to children to eat something sweet. And so oftentimes, you know, children will take it unintentionally in high quantities. And so I think, you know, sleeping and sleeping difficulties have increased in this country, particularly with the pandemic, with the war going on in Ukraine, with the mass shootings going on. We're all under a lot of stress, you know, and stress affects sleep. And, you know, it's easy to purchase melatonin and try to treat the sleeping issue. And so it's just readily available in our homes, and children can get into cabinets and can get into places where these drugs are stored and ingest large doses of melatonin unintentionally.
We're talking to Dr. Christina Abhavana this morning with Hartford HealthCare. And Dr. Abhavana has been on the show before to talk about melatonin. And she's back this morning because of a national report that showed there was a massive spike in calls to poison control centers across the country for children who took large amounts of melatonin, ended up in hospitals, some even on ventilators. And it was really alarming and troubling. So I am curious, Dr. Abhavana, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had said earlier in this segment that in other countries, you do need a prescription to get melatonin. Now, here in the U.S., you do not. It is over-the-counter. It is considered a dietary supplement. In fact, a lot of the melatonin I've ever taken are in gummy form. So it can be looked at as very attractive even to children. Do you think the United States at this point has enough reason to now regulate it to require a prescription in order to get melatonin?
Well, yeah, I think there is, one can make a case for it. However, you know, it would have to go through the proper channels to be regulated. I know that in Canada, it was also just like in the United States, where it was a dietary supplement until now it's regulated. So, you know, I do think that there is, you know, there is a case to be made for it to be regulated here in the United States. And maybe we'll see a reduction in these unintentional overdoses.
The other thing that could be done, Dr. Abhavana, and I'd love your professional opinion on this, is I know now when my son was in his earlier toddler years, getting out of his infant years, they now lock up the children's Tylenol, the baby Tylenol and any of those And you have to go to the pharmacist, at least at my pharmacy, you have to go to them and say, hey, I have a 2-year-old. I've been given permission by my doctor to go and get this medicine. And they have to come over and unlock it for you. And there have been times where if I did not say that, they on the way over will say, well, do you have a child who needs this? Yes, I do. You've already consulted with your doctor about this, correct? And I would imagine if you said no, they would at least take the time to go, well, I would really recommend you do that. Or maybe they aren't allowed to then give it to you. But I've noticed some of those medications are locked up. Do you think the same should be done for melatonin?
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. I think when, you know, it will prompt people to think twice, to actually put some thought into whether or not, you know, this is actually needed. And at least to sort of have a conversation with, you know, a healthcare professional as to whether or not it's indicated. Yeah, so I think, you know, that's a temporary solution, and I think it's definitely a good option.
Because I'm just thinking the big thing here, which you and I talked about, and even some of my listeners who have been reaching out about this since this study came out, is the idea that it's not just for kids that you should be consulting with your doctors. I had one listener who said, Melissa, my parents can't take it because they have lung issues. I thought, I don't even know how that's like how it's correlated, but it is. And they had to talk to their doctor beforehand because they've got these special needs. And you know, and we're talking about adults as well. And the missing link here is that melatonin is looked at as really almost like a Flintstone vitamin gummy. Like, that's the way I kind of look at it. I think people don't think twice about melatonin. It's so widely used that it's getting abused at this point. And I guess I would want to end this conversation by saying the importance of really consulting with your doctor about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because it's so readily available, it's still a hormone, right? It's still a hormone that you're putting into your body, and it's not just like a vitamin, you know? And so, yeah, for sure. Definitely make sure that you know why you're taking it. So if you have a problem sleeping, why do you have a problem sleeping? So finding out why will sort of guide the treatment plan. And, you know, melatonin isn't the answer for all sleeping problems.
It's so true. And again, Dr. Christina Abavana is actually a sleep medicine specialist. You know, just off the cuff, Dr. Abavana, how often do you find if you have a patient who comes in and says, hey, I think I need to get on a medication? And it's something as simple as, well, are you on your phone right before you go to bed because the blue light? Or, you know, are you watching television before you go to bed because that stimulates the mind? Like, how often do you find very quick fixes just based on asking the question, well, what is your routine before you go to bed?
Right. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There are a lot of difficulties sleeping, initiating, or even maintaining sleep. You know, there are a lot of behavioral modifications that can be implemented, and that will, you know, not necessarily medication is warranted. So there are a lot of patients, you're right, that, you know, with a little bit of changes in their day-to-day behaviors can actually improve their sleep drastically.
Dr. Abavana, I really appreciate you coming on this morning. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you again really soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is, again, Dr. Christina Abavana with Hartford HealthCare, a sleep medicine specialist right here on WICC. This broadcast is officially going to the dogs this morning, and for very good reason. We are learning about Piglet. Oh, my goodness, Piglet, what a cutie. From Dr. Melissa Shapiro. And Melissa, welcome to the show. Thank you for sharing Piglet's story. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So who is Piglet? Tell us about Sweet Piglet.
Well, Piglet is a dog. He has been mistaken for a pig. That is why he got his name. He's a little dog. He's a Dachshund Chihuahua mix. He's called a double dapple, which is an unfortunate thing for him because both of his parents were dapple colored. And when you breed two dapple-colored dogs, unfortunately, 25% of the puppies will have it. Each puppy has a 25% chance that they will receive both of the dominant dapple genes, which is linked to congenital ear and eye defects, as well as the color white. So he's sort of pink because his hair coat is so sparse due to his breed combination. So he looks pink. He looks like a little pig, and he did really look like a piglet when he was a baby, and that's how we called him Piglet. So he came from Georgia, from a rescue in Georgia, and we adopted him. We were going to foster him, but we kept him after 2 months. It was a long haul. He was screaming and carrying on and very disruptive, but we did finally kind of come to terms with the fact that he was here to stay, and he did stay. And thankfully, I had this revelation that we weren't giving him away. So he has I thought he would be an ambassador for raising funds for dog rescue groups, especially mm-hmm. those that focus on disabled pets. But he also has an educational program, which thankfully I connected with a teacher who was a follower on his Facebook page that was growing in the first summer in 2017. And she was going to use him for growth mindset lessons in her classroom. And we connected, collaborated, and we have now a Piglet Mindset educational outreach program, which is on our website. It's free for download. There are educational materials there teachers can use as a supplement to their own growth mindset and inclusion curriculum in school. And Piglet is an engaging little adorable dog that kids love, and it makes the lessons a lot of fun, and they have he has a great impact on kids. So that's it in a nutshell.
No, and he has such a great story, and again, he's just absolutely precious. And of course, you can find this information. I'll give you more of it, pigletmindset.org, but we'll get back to that in a second. Something that you didn't mention, Dr. Shapiro, is that Piglet has, because of the double dapple parent situation, he is both blind and deaf. What is that like? Because he's about five now, right? He's about 5 years old?
Yes. He turned five in January. We don't know his exact birth date, of course, because he's a rescued dog, but he is deaf and blind. He got both genes, and he got the whole shebang of the potential effects, because some of them aren't deaf or blind. Some are part and, you know, one or the other, but he is
both.
He just
got it all. Wow. What is that like?
Well, when he came here, he was very upset. He was all of 1.5 pounds. He fit in my hand, and he was screaming all the time. He was very upset. Visibly just in distress, but it took a little time. We have six other dogs, and they were very helpful to him, especially one of the dogs, Susie, who we lost last April. But she was very nurturing to all the other dogs as well as they came into our family, and she laid with him, she played with him. The other dogs did as well. She sort of led this crusade to help Piglet, I think. And they helped him. We helped him also. We held him a lot. I taught him tap signals right away so that it was a way for him to understand that we were going to communicate with him, and he would be able to settle down and not worry when he was going to eat, when he was going to go out to pee, just what would happen to him in a day. And he really loved the routine that I set for him.
Wow.
And he settled down after a while. He's still a character. He barks a lot when he wants something. But he really, he started to thrive. He gained confidence. And it was a really nice thing to see, and a really nice model for kids and adults to be inspired by, that you use what you have, and you face the challenges in a positive way, and you can have a happy life, and you can have access to others and to a really happy life, which is what Piglet does. That's what makes him such an effective teaching model and inspiration on his social media pages to adults.
Oh my gosh, Melissa Shapiro, I'm in love with him. I'm in love with him, and I feel like as soon as I go home, I'm going to have to tell my four-year-old about him, and he's just going to want to come visit Piglet. I can't even tell you. He's a huge animal lover, my Chase, and my parents have Chihuahua mixes, and he's just, you may never get Piglet back, so maybe I shouldn't bring Chase to you.
You should go to the bookstore and pick up a copy of his brand new book that was launched yesterday, which is called Piglet Comes Home, How a Deafblind Pink Puppy Found His Family.
Oh my
and
gosh.
The age bracket for the book is like 4 to 8. It's a book that's labeled for 4 to 8, but all the adults that follow Piglet on his social media pages are buying one for themselves, and they're reading it and they're crying while they're reading it.
Of course they are.
So sweet.
He's so incredible. Wow.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story for kids. I mean, I'm very excited about the book because it's going to fit in really well with our program in the classroom, and the teachers will have it there. Kids can buy it and have it at home. And if Piglet didn't have an educational program, it's still a really, really nice story with a very nice message of resilience and inclusion, just, you know, his messaging in all of his areas that he reaches people. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah. And there is also an adult book, if people want to read that, Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deaf, Blind, Pink Puppy and His Family. That's another book that you guys have available, which is just amazing. And I think, you know what, Piglet was so blessed to have found you, because I got to be honest with you, Dr. Melissa Shapiro, most people would just, you know, see this dog and see all the challenges and either just keep them as a pet and move forward, or they would, like you said, give this animal up. And I think what you and your family did is beautiful. And the fact that you used his story to do so much good for thousands of students, I just commend you. I think it's amazing, really.
Oh, thank you. You know what? It's just growing and growing. We have a nonprofit that supports it. But all the information is on PigletMindset.org. The book, the adult book, actually, parents and teachers are reading to their students and kids, because it's a G-rated book, but it tells the whole story. It's the rescue story, my life as a veterinarian, taking care of animals, our family, and how, you know, everything sort of just came and led to Piglet entering our family. And then, of course, all the details of Piglet, our bedtime routine. And when I go to the schools to meet with the kids, because part of our program is a visit virtually or in person, if the teachers and schools are willing and want it, all the kids want to know facts about Piglet. They want to know, where does he sleep? Who's his best friend of all the dogs? How does he know which dog he's with? How does he know when he goes into the animal hospital who he's looking for? He has friends there where I work. And it's really, you know, it's really interesting. We don't make a spectacle of him just because he's deaf and blind. It's not that interesting that he would accommodate, you know, and adapt. Of course he's going to. People do, and animals do, with disabilities.
Right.
Watch him doing it with his determination and his drive. That's what makes him so engaging and attractive to people, because of his little personality, which is gigantic. So all of this comes together, and it's really, it's so much fun to do this, but it's really, when teachers tell me the impact that he has on their kids, that you know, there's a kid that has been ostracized for some reason or another, not even intentionally, but because the kids are uncomfortable
with
the disability.
That's just how it is, yeah.
They bring him, they meet Piglet and Piglet Mindset, and they suddenly realize, wait a minute, we can do something else, and we're going to work on this and figure out how to include this, one of our peers, and how they can be a friend of ours. And I'm getting chills just talking about it, because teachers actually tell me the specifics of these stories, and it's just, it's driving for me, and it's motivating to do more and reach more, which is why I'm grateful to you for having us on the radio.
Oh, it's
the more people that join, the better.
I was going to say, I think the first thing I'm going to do when I get off the air is I'm going to send your website over to my son's preschool over in Fairfield, because I think they would love this. And again, if you want to learn more, head over to PigletMindset.org. You can find everything you need to know about Piglet, the nonprofit, the books that are available, and so much more. And Dr. Melissa Shapiro, I thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having us. I can't thank you enough. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Melissa. Talk to you soon.